Welcome to Two and Two Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. In this hour, mystery. Later on, we hear Mr. and Mrs. North, but right now, it's the adventures of Sherlock Holmes with Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce as Holmes and Watson in this Mutual Broadcasting System episode from April 15th, 1946, called The Mystery of the Headless Monk.
Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And as for me, well, I'd like to tell you the easiest way I know to get the reputation of being the perfect host. Next time friends come over for dinner, before you sit down to the table, serve glasses of Petri California Sherry. Petri Sherry is the best beginning a good meal ever had. I say Petri Sherry because Petri Sherry is extraordinary sherry. You can tell by looking at it. Hold it to the light. Notice how clear it is. Notice its beautiful deep amber color. And you can tell Petri Sherry is unusual from just a whiff of its fragrance. And, of course, in the last analysis, you can tell just how fine a wine Petri Sherry is by tasting it. That's the best test of all. And that's where you'll get the most pleasant surprise, because Petri Sherry really tastes wonderful. A flavor right from the heart of the grape. So serve Petri Sherry to your family and your friends, and serve it proudly, because the name Petri is the proudest name in the history of American wine. I'm sure our good friend Dr. Watson's expecting us. Let's not keep him waiting.
Come in.
Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell. You'll forgive me if I don't get up, won't you, my boy?
Of course, Doctor. What's the matter, a touch of rheumatism?
No, I've played 18 holes of golf today.
I hope that when I'm your age, Doctor, I can be half as sprightly.
Oh, it's very nice of you, but if you don't mind, we won't discuss the question of my age. So drop your chair, make yourself comfortable. I'll get on with tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure.
Well, from the hint you gave us last week, it sounded like quite a spooky story.
It was, Mr. Bartell. It certainly was. Towards the end of November in the year 1895... a dense yellow fog had settled down over London. For 4 or 5 days, it was impossible from our rooms in Baker Street to see the outline of the houses opposite.
A real London pea super, huh, Doctor?
Yes, my boy, and it became most depressing. The first day, Holmes had spent in cross-indexing his huge book of criminal references. The second and third had been patiently occupied with a subject which he had recently made his hobby, the music of the Middle Ages. But when on the fourth day, on pushing back our chairs after breakfast, we saw the greasy, heavy brown swirl still drifting past us and condensing in oily drops upon the window panes, Sherlock Holmes's impatient and active nature could endure this drab existence no longer. He paced restlessly about our sitting room, chafing against the inaction. After several minutes of these perambulations, he turned to me and spoke.
Anything of interest in the paper, Watson?
News of a revolution, a possible war, and of an impending change in the government. Nothing to interest you, though. No crimes of any importance.
The London criminal is certainly a dull and unenterprising fellow these days. Look out of the window, Watson. See how the figures loom up, are dimly seen, and then blend once more into the foggy depths. What a day for a thief or a murderer. He could roam London as the tiger does the jungle, unseen until he pounces, and then evident only to his victim.
That's a cheerful thought, I must say. Hello, hello. I wonder who that is.
Probably a visitor for Mrs. Hudson, or perhaps the local plumber has finally condescended to pay some attention to the faulty gas jet in our hallway.
I don't think you're right on either count. I can hear Mrs. Hudson's footsteps on the stairs.
Come in. Come in. Yes, Mrs. Hudson, what is it?
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Holmes, but there's a gentleman to see you. Says it's most important, and he asked me to give you this card.
Oh, thank
sir.
You. Oh, Mortimer Harley, eh? Show him up, please, Mrs. Hudson.
Very good.
Mortimer Harley, and who's he?
I've not had the pleasure of meeting him personally, but I'm quite familiar with his scientific reputation.
Scientific? Oh, in what does he specialize?
Oh, I suppose one might refer to him as one of the greatest authorities on all matters connected with the occult.
You mean the fellow dabbles in supernatural stuff and all that sort of thing?
I mean, my dear Watson, that Mortimer Harley is an extremely intelligent man with a thoroughly comprehensive and scholarly knowledge of his field and an intense belief in the existence of the supernatural force. Now, here he is to speak for himself. Oh, come in, Holly. Thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
You're Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, sir. This is my colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, Mr. Holly?
How do you do, Doctor?
Won't you sit down, sir?
Thank you. Well, you fellows are probably wondering who I am and what's brought me here.
Well, we're not wondering who you are, Mr. Holly. My friend Holmes was just telling me of your scientific eminence.
I'm flattered that you know of me, Holmes. Just the same, you're wondering why I'm here.
Naturally, sir.
Well, since you know I'm a student of the occult, I'll get right down to my problem. Mr. Holmes, have you ever heard of the headless monk of Trevenis Chapel?
Oh, yes, indeed, Mr. Holly. An apparition to be counted among our more intangible national treasures, I should say.
I'm sorry to appear stupid, but I have never heard of the headless monk of whatever it is, Chapel.
Well, then, let me tell you about it, Doctor.
Yes, I wish you would.
Trevenis Manor in Cornwall was once an abbey. It was expropriated during the reign of Henry VIII, and several of the monks were killed in some of the minor difficulties attendant on such an act. But one of the murdered monks, a certain Brother Hugh, the chapel organist, was persistent. He still haunts the chapel today. He still plays the organ, and since he was beheaded, he always appears headless.
Charming little legend, Mr. Harley, but you can't expect us to believe it's anything but a legend, surely.
Ah, skeptic, eh? How about you, Mr. Holmes?
I'm extremely curious to know why you've come to see me, Mr. Harley.
I'll tell you why. I have a rare opportunity to investigate the phenomena. You see, the son of an old friend of mine, a young fellow by the name of Leonard Miles, is secretary to the owner of Trevenis Manor. He asked me to stay there, and I find the invitation irresistible, particularly since the phenomena have curiously increased of late, Mr. Holmes, almost as though some more mortal agency were motivating them.
Huh. Now I see why you've come to me, Mr. Holly.
I knew you would, Holmes. You see, I'm like my good friend and fellow investigator, Carnacki. I believe in being prepared to meet phenomena on either the natural or the supernatural plane. If the phenomena are real, then they fall legitimately in my field.
Whereas if, as I'm sure you suspect, they are being contrived by human forces, then you think that's more in my department, eh, Holly?
Exactly.
Well, what do you say, Holmes? A little trip to Cornwall would be a nice few days. We'd probably escape the fog down there.
Ah, the blazes with the weather, Watson.
What?
I'm much more concerned with the fog that surrounds the appearances of the headless monk at Trevenis Chapel. And Mr. Harley, I accept your invitation with pleasure. There's still time to catch the Cornish Express. We can be at Trevenis Manor before the moon is up.
Who's this funny-looking fellow coming down the steps towards us?
If I didn't hear the sound of his footsteps, I'd believe it was a psychic manifestation. He certainly looks as if he came from beyond the grave.
Who be ye, gentlemen? Where be ye going?
Well, supposing you tell us who you are first, my good man.
Who be I? I be David Pendragon, sir. That's who I be. Stable-hand here at the manor. And I ask you, gentlemen, again, where you be going?
We're staying at the manor, and we're just going to take a look at the chapel.
Oh, don't ye do that, sir. People that go in there don't often come out the way they go in, sir. Don't he do it, gentlemen.
What are you talking about, my good fellow?
I be talking about the ghoulies and the ghosties and the organ music that comes out of the nowhere.
You heard it?
Of course I heard it, sir. Just like I seen the poor monk walking around without his head on.
Take us into the chapel, will you? And show us where you saw the figure.
Aye, that I will not, sir. Not for all the gold in Porthcawl will I go back and chance seeing the poor lost soul wandering about without his head on. You gentlemen know what's good for ye. You'll not go in there either. Mark my words. Don't ye go in that chapel.
Extraordinary chap. Seems really frightened of the place.
Yes, but it's more than blind superstition that accounts for his reluctance. Let's go in, shall we?
Well, I suppose it's all right.
Great Scott. Listen to that. The organ. The ghost's playing it.
We are extremely fortunate. A psychic manifestation as soon as we enter. Remarkable.
Psychic manifestation? Rubbish. Look who's sitting at the keyboard. It's Holmes. Holmes? What's the matter, Watson? What's the matter? You frightened us to death, didn't he, Holly?
Well, speaking for myself, Doctor, he disappointed me. I thought it was a genuine phenomenon.
What do you think you're doing, Holmes? I thought you were still behind us.
I'm sorry if I frightened you, Watson. I was curious about this organ. I slipped in by the side door ahead of you and tested the instrument. It's in astonishingly good condition for a disused chapel, don't you think, Harley?
Yes, I do, Holmes.
One might reasonably presume that someone tends it with great care. In fact, I would go further and say...
You? What are you doing in here?
We are guests at the manor house, and we decided to pay a visit to the chapel before we paid our respects to our host.
Oh, my father is your host. I'm Dorothy Brown.
Oh, how do you do, Dorothy? My name is Holmes, and these gentlemen are Dr. Watson and Mr. Harley.
How do you do, Dr. Watson? Mr. Harley, I heard the organ music, and I was terribly frightened. You've heard of the legend, I suppose.
You mean about the headless monk and the ghostly organ and music, Miss Brownlee?
Yes, Doctor. And it's more than a legend, I assure you. That's why I rushed over here as soon as I heard it. It must have frightened all the servants within hearing distance. Why were you playing the organ?
I was curious to see whether it was in good repair.
Obviously it is, Mr. Holmes. Well, my father and his secretary, Mr. Miles, are expecting you, I know. Let's walk over to the house, shall we? I'm sure you've seen enough of the chapel for tonight. Father, this is Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
How do you do,
Miles?
Sir?
How do you do? This is my secretary, Leonard Miles.
How do you do, Mr. Miles?
How do you do, Mr. Holmes? Dr. Watson? I'm afraid Mr. Brown is rather angry with me. I hadn't told him that you were an expert on psychic phenomena, Mr. Harley.
Well, I fail to see why the knowledge of that fact should make you angry, Mr. Brownlee.
I don't want you ferreting about into this so-called ghost business. There's been enough trouble in the neighborhood already. It's almost impossible to keep servants. And these Cornish people are incredibly superstitious.
You haven't seen the ghost yourself, Mr. Brownlee?
Oh, of course not. There isn't any ghost, I tell you.
You heard the mysterious organ playing?
No, I haven't. And I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Good.
Yes, what is it?
David Pendragon's at the door. He's very anxious to see you, sir.
Pendragon? Oh, very well. Tell him to come in.
Yes, sir.
David? What does he want, I wonder?
Pendragon, that's the fellow we met outside the chapel, isn't it?
Yes. Quite a colorful character.
Oh, he's a superstitious old fool, if you ask me. But he is a good groom. Yes, Pendragon? What is it?
Begging your pardon, sir, but there be trouble at the chapel again tonight. I says to myself, David, 'tis your duty to go to the master, I
oh,
say.
Oh, never mind. What's the trouble?
As the moon was hanging low tonight, sir, I hears the organ a-playing.
But that was Mr. Holmes, my good man.
Aye, that's what he thinks, maybe. But what I says to myself is, what made him play the organ? Then this very night, I saw the headless monk. With my own eyes, I saw that poor soul with his head off, wandering in the moonlight. I saw that, sir, with my own eyes, I did.
Oh, get out of here, you blithering old fool. And I'm warning you. If I hear any more nonsense about this ghost, you'll lose your job, you understand? Now come along, be off with you.
Aye, sir, begging your pardon, sir.
Come on, I'll give you chaps a drink.
Mr. Brownlee seems absolutely rabid on the subject of the ghost, eh?
Yes, suspiciously so. What about he's trying to hide?
Whatever it is, I don't think he'll be successful. In your profession, Holmes, you know that murder will out. It's true in my profession also. Try to suppress them as you may, gentlemen. Ghosts will out.
This place may be haunted, but I swear that I never spent a better night anywhere.
Ah, good morning, Mr. Harley.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Good morning.
I'm glad to see I'm not the only late riser.
Oh, were you up late too, sir?
Yes, I was, Doctor. I decided to ignore the veiled threat of Mr. Brownlee, and so I did a little investigating in the chapel. Would you mind passing the teapot?
And what were the results of your investigations, Mr. Harley?
Well, there was no psychic manifestation, you understand, but I'm sure of one thing. That chapel is evil. Evil to the hearts of its stones. And I'll swear that evil does not stem from the hapless monk who was murdered there.
You confirm certain suspicions aroused by my own investigations last night. There is evil here, Mr. Harley, and I think I know its nature. Unless I mistake every sign and reaction, someone has been initiating the local peasantry into the evils of the Black Mass.
Black Mass? Good Lord, what a shocking thought.
My own sensations last night confirm your theory, Holmes. There is a coven here, I swear it, hiding its own obscene practices under cover of the haunting.
Well, that sounds quite feasible. After all, the people are so superstitious that they'd keep as far away as possible from the chapel when they heard the organ playing.
This problem falls into both our fields, Harley. The practice of black magic is a criminal offense.
Perhaps it's just as well the old laws against witchcraft are still in force.
I imagine, Mr. Harley, that you have your own methods of combating such forces as we're up against?
Oh, yes, Holmes, though mine are not connected with the legal aspects of the case.
May I ask what you plan to do, sir?
Well, I have several rather elaborate preparations to make, Doctor. It'll take me most of the day, I'm afraid. However, I shall explain them to you all after dinner tonight.
It's very pleasant to sit here after a good dinner with a superb brandy at one's elbow and listen to the piano being so charmingly played.
You're very kind, Doctor.
Won't you play something more, Miss Bowley?
I'd love to.
Are you enjoying your stay down here?
Oh, very much, thank you. Both Mr. Harley and I have found the local folklore extremely interesting.
I see. You fellows haven't been investigating the haunted chapel business again, have you?
Now, look here. If you have, I shall be very angry. It's abusing my hospitality. I told you distinctly I didn't want any more talk of ghosts.
We are not talking of ghosts, my dear Mr. Brownlee. I have something even more important that I must fight now. It's possibly a little hard to imagine me as a crusader. Me, the stooped little man beside the four of you, as toweringly tall a quartet of men as I have ever faced. And yet, I am your St. George.
What on earth are you talking about, sir?
I'll tell you in secrecy. This mustn't reach the ears of the peasantry. I refer to myself as St. George because I go to wipe out an evil that lives in your midst, a living modern dragon.
Oh, please, Mr. Harley, that sounds deadly frightening.
And to rid you all of this fiend, I must cleanse the chapel, purify it, exorcise it, remove its residue of psychic evil. That, gentlemen, is my mission tonight.
Dorothy!
He's fainted.
Get some smelling salts, quickly.
I'm afraid you were a little too graphic, Mr. Harley.
I'm sorry if I frightened the young lady, but I'm sure that after tonight she will have no further grounds for fear in Trevenis Manor.
Holmes.
Yes, old chap.
Did you hear anything?
Nothing but the owls and the clock striking midnight.
I'm getting off the jumper. What do you suppose Harley's up to?
I can imagine his procedure. Midnight, the crucial hour, I suppose, in his endeavors. I wish him luck. My own plans are not nearly as clear, unfortunately. I sense a guiding force here, but I lack the clues.
There is something, Holmes. Listen!
Great heavens! It's the organ in the chapel.
And Harley's in there alone.
Not alone. Listen to the organ. Pealing forth its madness. Come on, Watson. Something has gone horribly wrong.
Dr. Watson, that was a heck of a place to break off your story.
Then let us continue it as speedily as possible, my boy. As soon as we heard that devilish organ music, Holmes and I rushed out of the house and raced in the moonlight down the path leading to the ruined chapel. By the time we reached the entrance, the organ music had ceased, and the tall, gangling figure of David Pendragon was standing in our path.
You gentlemen be wanting at this
Never
time of
that.
Night.
What are you doing here?
I be here because the gentleman gave me 5 shillings to stand outside here and see that no one disturbed him. That's why I be here. And nobody did come or go. He still be there, he be.
But when you heard that organ music, why the devil didn't you go in?
Organ music? I heard no organ music,
come on,
sir.
Watson.
Great heavens. Look at him.
We're too late. Poor devil. A knife through his heart.
It's obvious who did it. That's Philip Pendragon. I'll go and grab him before he gets away.
No, he's not our man. This murder was planned with devilish cunning.
The curious thing, there's no sign of a struggle at all. Looks he just stood here and allowed himself to be stabbed.
There are these chalk marks with which the body is surrounded. They're known as a pentagram, I believe. He thought it would protect him completely from the supernatural forces.
Poor chap. For once, his researches went too far.
Yes, because they touched not on the supernatural, but upon natural evil. And remember, Watson, that only 3 people besides ourselves and David Pendragon knew of this vigil.
Yes, Brownlee, his daughter, and young Miles, the secretary.
Exactly. Go back to the house, will you? And bring them here. Perhaps we can lay a ghost by trapping a murderer.
And that's all I know, Mr. Holmes.
Well, you've not established much so far, Holmes. Three of them all swear that they were asleep and that they didn't hear the organ.
Yes, then you can't prove otherwise,
Holmes. I think I can prove that one of you was not only awake, but also murdered Mortimer Harley.
But why should any of us want the poor man dead,
Mr. Holmes? In your case, young lady, I confess that I find it hard to conceive a motive.
Implying that Mr. Brownlee and I might have one?
Well, Mr. Miles, you must admit that you're responsible for Mr. Harley coming here.
And you, Mr. Brownlee, must admit that you did everything in your power to prevent the dead man from carrying out his investigations. Why? What were you trying to hide?
Nothing. It's just that I wanted to sell the manor house. All this talk about ghosts was giving the place a bad name. And if it had gone on, I'd never have disposed of the property.
Well, speculation can get us nowhere. Let's get down to facts. Is there any other entrance to this chapel besides the two doors?
None.
Oh, there was an old smuggler's cave which came out near the organ loft, but Father had it bricked up some years ago.
I had to. The tourists kept crawling in.
Go and examine it, will you, Watson, old chap?
All right, sure, Holmes.
If you don't mind my saying so, Mr. Holmes, it seems obvious who did this murder.
You told us David Pendragon admitted that no one went in or out as he stood guard. He must have done it himself. Oh, the man's half-witted.
And superstitious. He might have killed Mr. Harley because he was attempting to interfere with the ghost.
And then played the organ to celebrate the occasion? I think you overestimate David Pendragon's capabilities, Miss Brownlee. Mr. Miles.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Pendragon is waiting outside. Would you be kind enough to ask him to come here for a moment, please?
Certainly.
What did you find out, Watson?
Well, it's easy to see where it was bricked up, but it's a solid wall now. No one could get in that way.
But if no one came in or out, who else could have killed Harley except Pendragon?
The ghost, or rather the person disguised as a ghost. The dead man expected a psychic manifestation. When he saw the supposed ghost coming towards him, he offered no resistance. He believed that the magical pentagram would protect him. Ah, there you are, David.
Aye, here I be, sir. But I don't know nothing more than what I told thee.
No, don't be frightened, Pendragon. All we want is the truth.
That's what I told thee, sir.
And tell us a little more, will you? When you said no one had entered the chapel tonight, you meant that no mortal man had entered, didn't you?
That I did, sir. But how could I say I'd seen the ghost when Mr. Brownlee here had told me I'd lose my job if I spoke of the ghost again?
Well, now we're getting somewhere. So you did see the ghost?
That I did, sir. The poor soul walking through the moonlight with no head on his body.
You saw it quite clearly?
Just as clearly as I sees you now, sir.
How tall was he?
He was... Would you mind standing against the wall, sir?
Yes, of course.
He was as tall as... Well, his shoulders come to just where your shoulders come now, sir.
A tall man, then, so we narrow it down to either you, Mr. Brownlee, or you, Mr. Miles.
This is utterly ridiculous.
Of course it is.
On the contrary, gentlemen, the case is solved.
Which one of them was it, Holmes?
Neither. Remember that the ghost is headless. That means that the impostor must have built up fake shoulders covering the head. On either of these men, it would have brought their shoulders to the level of my head.
Great Scott, it was...
Bravo, Mr. Holmes. I didn't think you'd catch this.
Dorothy! No, I don't believe it.
Miss Brownlee, I must warn you that...
Keep back! Don't any of you come near me. As you see, I have a revolver.
Dorothy, for heaven's sake!
Don't speak to me of heaven! You thought I was a sweet little girl, didn't you, Father? You didn't know your dear, demure daughter could murder a man, did you?
Why did you kill Mortimer Harley?
Because he was a meddler. For months I've been practicing black magic here. For months I've been building up the legend of the headless monk and the organ music. It made me so wonderfully alone, so gloriously free to practice the rites. And then he came here. I let him live that first night because I thought he was a fool. But on the second... When he said he was going to exorcise this chap, to purify it, as he said, he signed his death warrant. If you could have seen his face, if you could only have seen his stupid, toddled face as I plunged the knife into him.
Dorothy!
He bled so beautifully.
Holmes, she's mad as a hatter. What are we going to do?
Baron, give me that revolver.
And let you take me to prison or an asylum? No, you'll never catch me.
She's backing up the stairs leading to the organ loft.
Dorothy, come back.
Don't try and follow me.
Look out. The railing's behind you.
Oh, and turn my head. Oh, no, Mr. Holmes, I...
Dorothy! My poor little girl.
Mr. Brownlee, the powers of evil are frightening. Your daughter had killed one man and might have killed more. She was insane. Hopelessly insane.
Well, Doctor. That was quite an exciting story. Well, Dr. Watson, what new Sherlock Holmes adventure do you have lined up for us next week?
Well, now, let me think. Next week, Mr. Bartell, I'm going to tell you a story that started quietly enough as Holmes and I sat at a London dinner party, and yet, before the evening was over, we found ourselves involved in one of the most shocking scandals that ever rocked London society.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure was written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's story, The Adventure of the Devil's Foot. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studio. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes on Tuned to Yesterday from April 15th, 1946 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. If you were a listener in California at that time, Sherlock Holmes was on the air at 8:30 in the evening, and you could have also tuned in for another detective, The Fat Man, on KECA, or Comedy from Joan Davis Time on KNX, or the NBC radio affiliate KFI, broadcasting what is now the only other surviving broadcast from that hour, and that is The Cavalcade of America, which told the story of John J. McGraw of the New York Giants. It's an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVunier. And now Joseph Curtin and Alice Frost are Mr. and Mrs. North in the Investment Broker episode from the 1940s.
Mr. and Mrs. North, starring Joseph Curtin and Alice Frost. In the solemn atmosphere of a New York courtroom, far from the comfortable life of Pam and Jerry North, another drama from life is reaching its climax.
The defendant will rise.
A handsome, well-dressed man, fighting hard to conceal his nervousness, leaves his chair and faces the judge.
It is the sentence of this court that you, Charles Wyatt, having been convicted of fraud, be confined to the state penitentiary for a term of not less than 5 and not more than 10 years.
Yes, one drama is over. But as Gordon Ross, Charles Wyatt's attorney, gets to his feet, another drama is just commencing.
Your Honor, I petition that my client be admitted to bail pending an appeal of his conviction.
If there's no objection from the state, petition is granted.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court is adjourned.
5 to 10 years.
Now listen, Charles,
everything's going to be all right. I seem to have heard that one before.
We're not through yet, Charles. We'll win on the appeal, I'm sure of it.
You were sure I'd never be caught in the first place.
Now keep your voice down, Charles. Someone will hear you.
You're absolutely right. Someone will hear me. If my conviction isn't reversed on the appeal. And that someone will be the district attorney, Gordon. He'll hear how you were in this just as deep as I was.
We can't talk here, Charles. Come up to my hotel.
I can't come now. Being my wife in a half hour at the Circle Lounge.
Well, that's only a few blocks from the King William. I'm in room 251. Make it about 7:30.
I'll be there. And meanwhile, Gordon, remember what I said. If I go to prison, I'm taking you with me.
I'm sorry, dear, but I absolutely have to see this man Hobbs tonight. He's an important writer and...
Oh, can't you see him tomorrow, Jerry?
Well, he's leaving town first thing in the morning.
Well, what about our theater tickets, darling? We've been looking forward to seeing...
Now, don't get excited, dear. We can still go to the play.
How?
I've got it all figured out. We'll leave home a little early. I'll stop and talk to Hobbs. Then we'll go out to the theater.
Well, where do you have to meet Mr. Hobbs?
At his hotel, the King William. It'll work out just right.
Well, if you say so, dear, all right. But I have a strange feeling that this evening is getting off on the wrong foot.
another drink, Charles.
Look, Helen.
Another drink, please.
Very well. Another martini for Mrs. Wyatt, George.
Yes, sir.
Oh, don't look so disapproving. You won't be buying me martinis or anything else much longer.
That's about all my going to prison means to you, isn't it, Helen?
It isn't my fault that you got yourself in this stupid jam.
Why do you think I listened to Gordon Ross? Why do you think I went along with his plan to fleece a bunch of poor dopes?
Charles,
because you were never satisfied with what we had. You always had to have more and more and more.
I've heard enough.
Perhaps, Helen. But you haven't heard the big news yet.
What are you talking about?
Everything we have is going to go.
Go?
Satisfy the stockholders of the Wyatt Investment Company. The house, the car, your jewelry. Yes, even most of your clothes.
But why?
A martini, Mrs. Wyatt.
I don't want it.
Drink it, Helen. You look like you need it.
Well, Charles, where does this leave me?
It leaves you with absolutely nothing, Helen.
Let's get out of here.
All right. Do at Gordon's hotel in a few minutes anyway.
You want me to drive you there?
No, thanks. I'll walk. I'd better enjoy the fresh air while I still can.
Very funny. Your sense of humor is...
What's the matter?
We seem to have company again. Look over there.
Grimes. Wait here, Helen.
Good evening, Mr. Wyatt.
Just exactly what's the idea, Grimes?
The idea, Mr. Wyatt, of what?
Of following me around. This has been going on for weeks.
Does it bother you to have me follow you around, Mr. Wyatt?
Yes.
Good. Good. It kind of bothered me when the Wyatt Investment Company robbed me of every cent I had in the world.
Now, see here,
wife is sick, Mr. Wyatt, real sick. She needs medicine, doctors, nurses. But they cost money. And I haven't got any money because
I'm warning you, Grimes. Leave me alone.
If my wife dies, Mr. Wyatt, her blood will be on your hands.
Shut up.
You'll be a murderer. That's what you'll be. And you...
You old fool. I ought to...
You shouldn't have hit me, Mr. Wyatt.
For heaven's sake, Charles, what's going on?
I lost my temper for a moment.
Aren't things bad enough without getting involved in a street brawl? Come on.
All right.
You shouldn't have done that, Mr. Wyatt.
What time is it, darling?
Just 7:30.
That only gives us an hour to get to the theater.
Now, don't worry, dear. I'll take only a few minutes with Hobbs and we'll go... Oh, here we are. Down this way.
Down that way?
Mm-hmm.
Jerry, there's room 251 right across the hall.
But Hobbs isn't in room 251.
Oh, that's what the desk clerk said.
Oh, no, I distinctly heard him say 215.
Oh, this is silly.
It certainly is.
While we're standing here arguing, we could try both the rooms.
Then let's do it.
251 first.
All right, but I know Hobbs is in 215. No one there.
Knock again, dear.
But, Pam, Hobbs is expecting me, so if it were his room, he'd be in there,
oh,
and that's...
The door isn't closed tight.
Now, listen, I'm positive that Hobbs is in room two... Pam, what are you doing?
I know I'm right, Jerry. I'm just going to push open the door a crack and peek in.
Now, stop that. I'm telling you, this isn't Hobbs' room.
Jerry!
What's the matter?
There's a man in there, lying on the floor.
On the floor?
Look.
Come on.
Oh, Jerry. Is he...
With this knife in his back? Yes, dear. He's dead.
Jerry, is this the writer you were coming to see?
Hobbs? No.
We better call the police.
I'll try to get Bill Wagon, then call the hotel manager.
Jerry, did you hear that?
Yes.
Sounded like someone locked that door over there.
This must be a suite of rooms.
And that's the connecting door.
Let's try it.
Sure there's someone in there.
Yeah, the door's locked.
Come on.
Where are you going?
Out in the hall and try the other door to that room.
But Pam!
Come on, darling.
All right, but I think we should call Bill instead.
This door's locked, too.
Then let let's quit this running around and...
Jerry, if there's someone in there,
we... If there's someone in there, we'll let the police deal with them. Now, let's get back in the other room and call Bill.
All right. Oh, I had a feeling something would happen so that we wouldn't... Jerry, look.
What?
The connecting door's open now. There was someone in there.
But not now. And there isn't anyone in here, either.
Hmm?
Look at the floor, dear.
The body! It's gone! Jerry, I don't understand what you're doing.
Look, whoever in that other room picked up the body.
Yes,
and the only possible way they could get out without being seen is down these back stairs to the alley.
Well, this is the ground floor.
And that must be the door to the alley.
You see anyone?
Look.
A car.
Come on.
It's pulling away.
Hey, you, stop! Stop!
Oh, it's gone.
1-5-4-3-6-3-1-5-4-3-6-3.
What are you doing, Jerry?
The license number of that car. It's 1-5-4-3-6...
Jerry, stop!
Holy smoke.
Oh.
Whoever's driving that car was in a big hurry.
Oh, he almost hit you. Jerry, do you suppose that car could have been following the first one?
I don't know. But let's go back in the hotel and call the police. This is getting to be too much for me.
Fred Grimes.
Oh, yes. Charles told me about you. You're the man who...
I left my car running right over there. It's pretty old. It isn't anything like the one you just pushed into the bay, but... mighty lonely spot. You'd never get a taxi.
What are you doing here?
I was at your hotel. I saw what you put in that car. Why did you kill him, Mr. Ross?
I didn't kill him.
No need to get excited, Mr. Ross. A knife in the back wasn't any more than Charles Wyatt deserved. And the bottom of the bay is as good a grave as any for his kind.
What do you want, Grimes?
Suppose we talk about that on the way back to town. It's kind of chilly out here.
All right, let's go.
Here we are. Get in, Mr. Ross. You know, Mr. Ross, I lost nearly $10,000 in Mr. Wyatt's company. I never thought I'd see a dime of it again, but now...
If you think you're going to get $10,000 out of me, Grimes, you're as crazy as Wyatt told me you were.
Murder's a mighty serious crime, Mr. Ross.
But I didn't kill Wyatt.
You think the police will believe that if I tell them what I saw? Of course you don't.
All right, Grimes. How much will it take to keep quiet?
I told you I lost nearly $10,000.
I haven't got that kind of money. I'll give you $5,000, not a penny more.
$5,000 isn't...
Take it or leave it, Grimes. I mean it.
All right, Mr. Ross. I'll take it.
And that's all you'll ever get, you understand? I'm warning you, Grimes, you'll push me too far. What's so funny?
I was just thinking. You're the second man who's warned me tonight. Mr. Wyatt was the first. And look where he is.
Wagon speaking. Will you check that license number? Okay, give me the registration.
What time is it now, Jerry?
Right?
Nearly 9:30.
The play's been on an hour.
Go on, go
on. Heaven's sake, Pam, forget the play. I haven't even had a chance to go down the hall and talk to Hobbs.
Yeah, I got it. Thanks. Well, we know who that car was registered to.
Who, Bill?
A man named Charles Wyatt.
Who's he?
Well, this is who he is, right here on the front page of tonight's paper.
Investment broker gets 5 to 10 years for fraud.
Are you sure this is the same Charles Wyatt, though?
Positive. This suite belongs to his attorney, Gordon Ross.
I wonder if it was Gordon Ross's body we saw.
Well, it could have been, I suppose, but that...
No, it wasn't, Bill.
Well, how do you know, Jerry?
Here's a picture of Charles Wyatt on the second page.
Well, let's see. Jerry's right, Bill. This is the man whose body we saw.
You sure?
No question about it.
Well, at least we know who was killed, even if we don't know who killed him. Come along.
Where, Bill?
I'm going over to Charles Wyatt's home, and I want you two with me.
Hello?
Hello, Helen. This is Gordon. Is Charles there?
Charles? No. Isn't he with you?
He left my hotel some time ago. He said he's going home to pack.
Pack? What are you talking about?
Oh, I thought you knew. Charles told me he's clearing out, jumping his bail and running away rather than go to prison.
What kind of a story are you trying to hand me, Gordon?
What do you mean?
Charles isn't the kind of man who'd run away, and you know it.
You think I'm lying?
Yes.
Why should I?
I don't know, but I... There's someone at the door. I'll call you back. Are you at the hotel?
No, I'd better call you.
Well?
Are you Mrs. Wyatt? Mrs. Charles Wyatt?
Yes.
Lieutenant Wigan, homicide.
Homicide?
I want to talk to you. Come on, Pam, Jerry.
After you, dear.
Thank you.
I'm afraid I have bad news for you, Mrs. Wyatt. Your husband is dead.
Dead? Oh, no. No.
What happened to him?
Where is he?
Mr. and Mrs. North here saw him in a room at the King William Hotel. But a moment later, someone carried his body out.
So that's it.
What do you mean, Mrs. Wyatt?
Gordon Ross, Charles's lawyer, just called. He tried to tell me that Charles had run away.
Where was Ross calling from?
I don't know. His office, maybe. It's in the Colfax building.
Well, I'm going to get down there right away. I want to have a chat with Mr. Gordon Ross.
Do you want us to come too, Bill?
No, that won't be necessary.
Then I want to get back to the King William and see Hobbs, Pam. Come on.
I'll be back after I've seen Ross, Mrs. Wyatt.
All right, Lieutenant. I'll wait for you. Gordon Ross, that... Hello?
Mrs. Wyatt?
Who is this?
Fred Grimes.
What do you want?
Maybe I just called to offer my condolences.
How do you know about Charles?
But on the other hand, maybe I called to talk business.
Business?
Insurance business. Your husband must have carried quite a lot of insurance, Mrs. Wyatt.
What's that to you?
A lot of insurance you'll never collect unless his body is recovered.
Do you know where Charles is?
That depends on whether he had enough insurance to make it worthwhile.
Would you consider $75,000 worthwhile?
Suppose you come here and talk to me about that, Mrs. Wyatt. My address is in the phone book.
I can't come tonight.
You'd better, Mrs. Wyatt. When a man gets my age, his memory sort of goes back on him. By morning, I might have forgotten where your husband is.
Want me to run you back to the King William, Jerry?
No, thanks, Bill. That'd take you out of your way.
We'll catch a taxi.
Okay. Be seeing you.
Right,
bye.
Bill. Come on, dear. I think we'll stand a better chance of catching a cab over on... You wait.
Jerry, what's
quick,
there?
Duck in here.
What in the world?
Shh. Look who just passed.
Jerry, that's Mrs. Wyatt.
Right.
But she told Bill she'd wait for him.
Yes, and I'm rather interested in what made her change her mind. Let's see if we can find out where she's going. Come on.
All right, coming. Well, Mrs. Wyatt, you... Mr. Ross.
Hello, Grimes.
What do you want?
You weren't expecting me, were you?
Well,
No, you thought I was Mrs. Wyatt.
You old... Let go of me. Let go.
What's Mrs. Wyatt coming here for? Answer me.
Nothing.
You're lying. You're going to tell her where Wyatt is.
No.
When I warned you not to try to push me too far, Grimes, I meant that to include not trying to double-cross me.
What?
What are you going to do with that gun?
I'm going to save myself $5,000.
No.
You're old enough to die without missing anything, Grimes.
Don't kill me. Please. Please don't kill me. Please, Mr. Ross, you've got to listen to me.
I'll listen to you once tonight, Grimes. That's enough for one evening, for the rest of my life, in fact.
But you...
That'll be Helen Wyatt. Open the door and let her in.
No, I...
Open it. Go on.
Well, Mr. Grimes...
Hello, Helen.
Oh. Hello, Gordon.
Close the door, Grimes. Lock it.
What's he doing here, Mr. Grimes?
Look, Mrs. Wyatt,
Lock the door, Grimes.
The police are looking for you, Gordon.
The police? Why are they looking for me?
They want you for Charles's murder.
Charles's murder? Is Charles dead? My, how sad.
Oh, drop the act, Gordon. He was killed in your room, and a man and his wife named North saw the body.
Well, if they saw Charles's body, then where is it? You see, Helen, it's difficult to prove murder without producing a victim. Especially when the alleged victim had every reason to disappear on his own volition.
But Grimes knows where Charles's body is.
Do you, Grimes? Obviously, he hasn't the slightest idea what you're talking about, Helen.
You seem to have persuaded him quite effectively with that revolver you have in your hand. Well, I have an argument too, Gordon. It's right here, in my pocket.
Put down that gun, Helen, or I'll...
You'll what, Gordon? Kill me? Well, before you try it, you want to be very sure that I don't take you with me.
Top floor, Pam. Mrs. Wyatt must be up here. It's the only place she could be.
Well, there's only one door up here, Jerry.
And that's it.
Now listen, Helen.
Jerry's
going to do the listening, Gordon.
That's Mrs. Wyatt.
Is there a doorbell?
No.
Well, then knock. We've got to find out. I don't hear anything, do you?
No, I haven't heard
it. Come back here,
Wait.
Gordon. Come back.
Jerry!
It was a gunshot.
Try the door.
It's locked. Open up. Open up in there.
Someone's unlocking the door.
Mrs. Wyatt.
Jerry, look. Over by the window.
He was trying to get away. I shot him.
Who is it?
Gordon Ross.
And who are you?
My name's Grimes. Fred Grimes.
Ross, are you all right?
Yes. Yes, just my shoulder.
We'd better get a doctor.
And the police, too, Mr. North. Gordon Ross murdered my husband.
That's not true.
It is. You were afraid Charles would tell how you were implicated in the investment company fraud, so you killed him.
No.
And then you got rid of his body so it would look like Charles ran away.
I was the one who carried Charles out of the hotel, yes, but I didn't kill him. He was dead when I came into my room.
Then why didn't you call the police?
I was afraid that my part in the fraud would come out.
What'd you do with Wyatt's body?
He dumped it in the bay.
How do you know, Mr. Grimes?
I saw him. I was at the hotel. I saw him put the body in Wyatt's car. I followed him out to an old fishing dock on Staten Island. He pushed the car off the end of the dock.
You better try to get in touch with Wagon, Pam.
All right, Jerry.
Now, wait. What was Grimes doing at the hotel tonight? Have you thought of that? He hated Charles. He's been hounding him for weeks. He could have killed him. I could have, but I didn't. After I saw him and Mrs. Wyatt outside the Circle Lounge, I followed him when he walked over to the King William Hotel, and that's the last I saw of him.
Wait a minute. You say Charles Wyatt walked from the Circle Lounge to the King William, Grimes?
Yes.
And where'd you go, Mrs. Wyatt?
I came straight home.
Well, if you came straight home and your husband walked to the hotel, how did Gordon Ross get hold of your husband's car?
I took Charles's car keys and went out looking for it. The car was parked outside the hotel.
But how did it get there? That's what I want to know.
Oh, I see what you mean, Jerry. If Charles Wyatt walked to the hotel, then someone else must have driven the car and left it there.
And logically, who would that have been? You, Mrs. Wyatt.
If you're trying to say that I killed Charles, you're crazy. I had no reason to kill him.
How about his insurance?
Well, Mrs. Wyatt?
No. No, I didn't kill Charles.
Then how do you explain your car being at the hotel?
I don't know.
Look out, Jerry.
Come back here.
She's trying to get out the window. Grab her.
All right, I've got her.
Let me go. I don't want to live anymore. I just want to die.
Come away from the...
There. Put the window down.
Why did you stop me? What's left for me? I'm going to lose everything, my house, my jewelry.
So you did kill your husband for his insurance.
I had to, don't you understand? I had to. My whole life was going to be ruined.
Charles's insurance was all that was left. That was my only chance. So I followed Charles to Gordon's room and... I had to do it.
Why did you leave the car at the hotel?
When I left the hotel, I couldn't find my keys. I must have dropped them somewhere. I didn't dare go back, so I took a taxi home.
Shall I call Bill now, Jerry?
Yes, Pam. You can call him. What? I see. Yes, I understand.
Jerry.
Goodbye. Of all the stupid...
What's the matter, dear?
The room clerk at the King William Hotel thought I was asking for a Mr. Cobb's room when we were there. And Hobbs isn't even registered.
Oh, well, never mind that now. I just looked at our theater tickets, and guess what?
What?
They're for tomorrow night.
Huh?
Look at the date on them. January 31st.
But this is the 31st.
Oh, no, darling. It's the 30th. So we can see the play tomorrow night.
Well, that explains it. It
explains what, dear?
Why Hobbs isn't registered at the King William. His letter said he'd be in town the evening of the 31st.
Oh, Jerry. You mean you have to see him tomorrow night?
Yes. But don't worry, we can leave home early, stop by the King William. Hey, what are you doing, dear?
I'm calling the theater to reserve another ticket.
Another ticket? Who for?
For Mr. Hobbs, dear. I'm not going to take a chance of missing that play tomorrow night.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Mr. and Mrs. North, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated broadcast from the 1940s. And with cases closed, that's it for this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. It's been a pleasure.